This is Audible.
Penguin Audio presents The Invention of Wings by Sue Monk Kidd. Read by Jenna Lamia and Adepero Oduye.
Part 1, November 1803 to February 1805. Hetty Handful Grimke. There was a time in Africa the people could fly. Mama told me this one night when I was 10 years old. She said, "Handful, your granny mama saw it for herself. She said they flew over trees and clouds. She said they flew like blackbirds. When we came here, we left that magic behind." My mama was shrewd. She didn't get any reading and writing like me. Everything she knew came from living on the scarce side of mercy. She looked at my face, how it flowed with sorrow and doubt, and she said, "You don't believe me? Where you think these shoulder blades of yours come from, girl?" Those skinny bones stuck out from my back like nubs. She patted them and said, "This all what left of your wings. They nothing but these flat bones now, but one day you gonna get them back." I was shrewd like mama. Even at 10, I knew this story about people flying was pure malarkey. We weren't some special people who lost our magic. We were slave people, and we weren't going anywhere. It was later I saw what she meant. We could fly all right, but it wasn't any magic to it. The day life turned into nothing this world could fix, I was in the workyard boiling slave bedding, stoking fire under the wash pot, my eyes burning from specks of lye soap catching on the wind. The morning was a cold one. The sun looked like a little white button stitched tight to the sky. For summers, we wore homespun cotton dresses over our drawers. But when the Charleston winter showed up like some lazy girl in November or January, we got into our sacks. These thick-set coats made of heavy yarns. Just an old sack with sleeves. Mine was a cast-off and trailed to my ankles. I couldn't say how many unwashed bodies had worn it before me, but they had all kindly left their scents on it. Already that morning, Mrs. had taken her cane stick to me once across my backside for falling asleep during her devotions. Every day, all us slaves, everyone but Rosetta, who was old and demented, jammed in the dining room before breakfast to fight off sleep while Mrs. taught us short Bible verses like Jesus wept and prayed out loud about God's favorite subject, obedience. If you nodded off, you got whacked right in the middle of "God said this and God said that." I was full of sass to Aunt Sister about the whole miserable business. I'd say, "Let this cup pass from me," spouting one of Mrs. verses. I'd say, "Jesus wept because he's trapped in there with Mrs. like us." Aunt Sister was the cook. She'd been with Mrs. since Mrs. was a girl. And next to Tomfrey, the butler, she ran the whole show. She was the only one who could tell Mrs. what to do without getting smacked by the cane. Mama said, "Watch your tongue," but I never did. Aunt Sister popped me backward 3 times a day. I was a handful. That's not how I got my name, though. Handful was my basket name. The master and missus, they did all the proper naming, but a mama would look on her baby, laid in its basket, and a name would come to her. Something about what her baby looked like, what day of the week it was, what the weather was doing, or just how the world seemed on that day. My mama's basket name was Summer, but her proper name was Charlotte. She had a brother whose basket name was Hard Time. People think I make that up, but it's true as it can be. If you got a basket name, you at least had something from your mama. Master Grimke named me Hetty. But mama looked at me on the day I came into the world, how I was born too soon, and she called me Handful. That day, while I helped our aunt sister in the yard, mama was in the house, working on a gold sateen dress for Mrs. with a bustle on the back, what's called a Watteau gown. She was the best seamstress in Charleston and worked her fingers stiff with the needle. You never saw such finery as my mama could whip up, and she didn't use a stamping pattern. She hated a book pattern. She picked out the silks and velvets her own self at the market and made everything the Grimkes had. Window curtains, quilted petticoats, looped panniers, buckskin pants, and these done-up jockey outfits for race week. I can tell you this much. White people lived for race week. They had one picnic, promenade, and fancy going on after another. Mrs. King's party was always on Tuesday, the jockey club dinner on Wednesday. The big fuss came Saturday with the St. Cecilia ball when they strutted out in their best dresses. Aunt Sister said Charleston had a case of the Granges. Up till I was 8 or so, I thought the Granges was a shitting sickness. Mrs. was a short, thick-waist woman with what looked like little balls of dough under her eyes. She refused to hire out Mama to the other ladies. They begged her, and Mama begged her too, because she would have kept a portion of those wages for herself. But Mrs. said, I can't have you make anything for them better than you make for us. In the evenings, Mama tore strips for her quilts, while I held the tallow candle with one hand and stacked the strips in piles with the other, always by color, neat as a pin. She liked her colors bright. Putting shades together nobody would think. Purple and orange, pink and red. The shape she loved was a triangle. Always black. Mama put black triangles on about every quilt she sewed. We had a wooden patch box for keeping our scraps, a pouch for our needles and threads, and a true brass thimble. Mama said the thimble would be mine one day. But she wasn't using it, I wore it on my fingertip like a jewel. We filled our quilts up with raw cotton and wool thrums. The best feeling was feathers, still is, and Mama and I never passed one on the ground without picking it up. Some days, Mama would come in with a pocket full of goose feathers she'd plucked from mattress holes in the house. When we got desperate to fill a quilt, we'd strip the long moss from the oak in the work yard and sew it between the lining and the quilt top, chiggers and all. That was the thing Mama and I loved, our time with the quilts. No matter what Aunt Sister had me doing in the yard, I always watched the upstairs window where Mama did her stitching. We had a signal. When I turned the pail upside down by the kitchen house, that meant everything was clear. Mama would open the window and throw down a taffy she stole from Mrs. Room. Sometimes here came a bundle of cloth scraps. Real nice calicoes, gingham, muslin, some import linen. One time, that true brass thimble. Her favorite thing to take was scarlet red thread. She would wind it up in her pocket and walk right out the house with it. The yard was overbusy that day, so I didn't have hope for a taffy falling from the clear blue. Mariah, the laundry slave, had burned her hand on charcoal from the iron and was laid up. Aunt Sister was on a tear about the backed up wash. Tomfrey had the man fixing to butcher a hog that was running and screeching at the top of its lungs. Everyone was out there. From old Snow, the carriage driver, all the way down to the stable mucker, Prince. Tomfrey wanted to get the killing over quick because Mrs. hated yard noise. Noise was on her list of slave sins, which we knew by heart. Number one, stealing. Number two, disobedience. Number three, laziness. Number four, noise. A slave was supposed to be like the Holy Ghost. Don't see it, don't hear it, but it's always hovering round on ready. Mrs. called out to Tomfrey, said, keep it down. A lady shouldn't know where her bacon comes from. When we heard that, I told Aunt Sister Mrs. didn't know what end her bacon went in and what end it came out. Aunt Sister slapped me into yesterday. I took the long pole we called a battling stick and fished up the bed covers from the wash pot and flopped them dripping on the rail where Aunt Sister dried her cooking herbs. The rail in the stable was forbidden because the horses had eyes too precious for lie. Slave eyes were another thing. Working the stick, I beat those sheets and blankets to an inch of their lives. We called it fetching the dirt. After I got the wash finished, I was left idle and pleased to enjoy sin number three. I followed a path I'd worn in the dirt from looping it 10-12 times a day. I started at the back of the main house, walked past the kitchen house and the laundry out to the spreading tree. Some of the branches on it were bigger round than my body, and every one of them curled like ribbons in a box. Bad spirits traveled in straight lines, and our tree didn't have one uncrooked place. Us slaves mustered under it when the heat wore down. Mama always told me, don't pull the gray moss off, because that keeps out the sun and everybody's prying eyes. I walked back past the stable and carriage house. The path took me across the whole map of the world I knew. I hadn't yet seen the spinning globe in the house that showed the rest of it. I poked along, wishing for the day to get used up so me and Mama could go to our room. It sat over the carriage house and didn't have a window. The smell of manure from the stable and the cowhouse rose up there so ripe, it seemed like our bed was stuffed with it instead of straw. The rest of the slaves had their rooms over the kitchen house. The wind whipped up and I listened for ship sails snapping in the harbor across the road, a place I'd smelled on the breeze, but never seen. The sails would go off like whips cracking, and all us would listen to see if it was some slave getting flogged in a neighbor yard, or was it ships making ready to leave. You found out when the screams started up or not. The sun had gone, leaving a puckered place in the clouds, like the button had fallen off. I picked up the battling stick by the wash pot and for no good reason jabbed it into a squash in the vegetable garden. I pitched the butternut over the wall where it splattered into a loud mess. Then the air turned still. Mrs. Voice came from the back door, said, "Old sister, bring Hetty in here to me right now." I went to the house, thinking she was in an uproar over her squash. I told my backside to brace up.
Sarah Grimke. My 11th birthday began with Mother promoting me from the nursery. For a year I'd longed to escape the porcelain dolls, tops, and tiny tea sets strewn across the floor, the small beds lined up in a row, the whole glut and bedlam of the place. But now that the day had come, I balked at the threshold of my new room. It was paneled with darkness, and emanated the smell of my brother, all things smoky and leather. The oak canopy and red velvet valance of the bedstead was so towering, it seemed closer to the ceiling than the floor. I couldn't move for dread of living alone in such an enormous, overweening space. Drawing a breath, I flung myself across the door sill. That was the artless way I navigated the hurdles of girlhood. Everyone thought I was a plucky girl, but in truth, I wasn't as fearless as everyone assumed. I had the temperament of a tortoise. Whatever dread, fright, or bump appeared in my path, I wanted nothing more than to drop in my tracks and hide. If you must err, do so on the side of audacity. That was the little slogan I had devised for myself. For some time now, it had helped me to hurl myself over door sills. That morning was full of cold, bright wind pouring off the Atlantic, and clouds blowing like windsocks. For a moment, I stood just inside the room, listening to the saber fronds on the palmettos clatter around the house. The eaves of the piazza hissed. The porch swing groaned on its chains. Downstairs in the warming kitchen, Mother had the slaves pulling out Chinese tureens and Wedgwood cups, preparing for my birthday party. Her maid Cindy had spent hours wetting and fastening Mother's wig with paper and curlers, and the sour smell of it baking had nosed all the way up the stairs. I watched as Binna, the nursery mama, tucked my clothes into the heavy old wardrobe, recalling how she used a fire poke to rock Charles's cradle, her cowrie shell bracelets rattling along her arms while she terrified us with tales of the Booga Hag, an old woman who rode about on a broom and sucked the breath from bad children. I would miss Benna. And sweet Anna, who slept with her thumb in her mouth. Ben and Henry, who jumped like banshees until their mattresses erupted with geysers of goose feathers. And little Eliza, who had a habit of slipping into my bed to hide from the booga's nightly reign of terror. Of course, I should have graduated from the nursery long ago, but I'd been forced to wait for John to go away to college. Our three-storied house was one of the grandest in Charleston, but it lacked enough bedrooms, considering how, well, fruitful Mother was. There were 10 of us. John, Thomas, Mary, Frederick, and myself, followed by the nursery dwellers, Anna, Eliza, Ben, Henry, and baby Charles. I was the middle one, the one Mother called different and Father called remarkable. The one with the carroty hair and the freckles, whole constellations of them. My brothers had once traced Orion, the Dipper, and Ursa Major on my cheeks and forehead with charcoal, connecting the bright red specks. And I hadn't minded. I'd been their whole sky for hours. Everyone said I was Father's favorite. I don't know whether he preferred me or pitied me, but he was certainly my favorite. He was a judge on South Carolina's highest court, and at the top of the planter class, the group Charleston claimed as its elite. He'd fought with General Washington and been taken prisoner by the British. He was too modest to speak of these things. For that, he had Mother. Her name was Mary, and there ends any resemblance to the Mother of our Lord. She was descended from the first families of Charleston, that little company of lords that King Charles had sent over to establish the city. She worked this into conversation so tirelessly we no longer made the time or effort to roll our eyes. Besides governing the house, a host of children, and 14 slaves, she kept up a round of social and religious duties that would have worn out the queens and saints of Europe. When I was being forgiving, I said that my mother was simply exhausted. I suspected, though, she was simply mean. When Benna finished arranging my hair combs and ribbons on the lavish Heppelwhite atop my new dressing table, she turned to me, and I must have looked forsaken, standing there, because she clucked her tongue against the roof of her mouth and said, "Poor Miss Sarah." I did so despise the attachment of poor to my name. Benna had been muttering poor Miss Sarah like an incantation since I was 4. It's my earliest memory, arranging my brother's marbles into words. It is summer, and I am beneath the oak that stands in the back corner of the workyard. Thomas, 10, whom I love above all the others, has taught me 9 words. Sarah, girl, boy, go, stop, jump, run, up, down. He has written them on a parchment and given me a pouch of 48 glass marbles with which to spell them out, enough to shape 2 words at a time. I arrange the marbles in the dirt, copying Thomas's inked words. Sarah, go. Boy, run. Girl, jump. I work as fast as I can. Benna will come soon looking for me. It's Mother, however, who descends the back steps into the yard. Benna and the other house slaves are clumped behind her, moving with cautious, synchronized steps as if they're a single creature, a centipede crossing an unprotected space. I sense the shadow that hovers over them in the air, some devouring dread, and I crawl back into the green-black gloom of the tree. The slaves stare at Mother's back, which is straight and without give. She turns and admonishes them.
"You are lagging. Quickly now. Let us be done with this."
As she speaks, an older slave, Rosetta, is dragged from the cow house, dragged by a man, a yard slave. She fights, clawing at his face. Mother watches, impassive. He ties Rosetta's hands to the corner column of the kitchen house porch. She looks over her shoulder and begs.
Mrs., please. Mrs., please.
She begs, even as the man lashes her with his whip. Her dress is cotton, a pale yellow color. I stare transfixed as the back of it sprouts blood. Blooms of red that open like petals. I cannot reconcile the savagery of the blows with the mellifluous way she keens, or the beauty of